Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
We're giving away the secrets to our method of digitally and physically finding big bucks on public ground.
This mini-series is powered by Onyx, and we deep dive into what we look for on a map, how we scout it in person, and what pins we use to help us effectively hunt deer.
This is
Public Pins. Today we're going to talk about probably the most social thing that a deer does. Deer are social critters. What's the word? Gregarious, I believe. They're gregarious, and they get all gregged up on scrapes a whole lot, man. A scrape is probably one of the coolest things you can find in the woods as far as, like, deer activity. So, Tyler, what is a scrape?
A scrape is a place that deer do not practice social distancing.
They do not.
They keep... The only 6 foot of distance they keep is sometimes between the branch and the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The scrape this is going to seem a little bit basic for some guys maybe that are listening, but there are plenty of guys that this is new stuff for. We have a lot of new hunters that listen, so thank you for being here and listening, and this is for you guys. A scrape is not when a deer rubs its antlers on a tree. That is referred to as a rub in the whitetail community. A scrape is where a buck scrapes the dirt out with its paws from underneath a branch, usually. So it's a signpost that deer make, essentially, where they can communicate with each other, like KC said. And what they will do typically is they'll walk up and they will sniff the branch that we call the licking branch. They will either sniff and or lick this branch. And then sometimes if they're a buck, a lot of times they'll throw their antlers up into the branch a little bit and just kind of tink it around a little bit. And then they'll usually paw out a little spot with their hooves, and then they'll kind of like hunch their back legs into their front legs, and they will pee in the scrape that they just scraped out the leaves of, you know, in that little dirt spot.
Making their pee go down their legs, over their tarsal glands, and into the dirt.
That's correct.
Not just pee, but there's a gland that they're also, two glands, actually. Mm-hmm. They got preorbital glands, which are around their eye sockets, and preorbital, like before the eye, right?
Uh-huh.
And then the tarsal glands, which are back there on the back legs, which is that kind of dark hawk.
Yeah.
Hawk is what it's called.
Hawk.
And a lot of whitetailers.
They get really dark later in the year, you know, later in the rut, as they get more and more pee on them. They get smellier, and a lot of times you can tell a buck is really amped up by the darkness that he has in that area. So there's a lot of scent being made at a scrape,
mm-hmm.
and it tends to be a good place for deer to communicate and therefore a good place for hunters to hunt. So with that, we're going to make this one of our public land pens that we're going to talk about. In what situation, though, would you enjoy hunting a scrape?
Almost every.
There you go.
We do a ranking thing pretty often on this deal. 1 to 10, 1 being for me, 1 being my top. Scrapes are going to be up there 1 or 2 for me.
Me too.
I love hunting scrapes. I think that you don't always shoot a deer at the scrape, but if there's a scrape around that's freshly worked, like, there are deer in the area.
Yeah.
And I think that about near any point in time when deer season is open, a scrape is a good place to be. Yeah. I will say that late October across the Midwest during cold fronts are scrape or high scrape activity time periods, right? That's when, like, if you want to talk about zoning into a period of time, you know, like the last 2 weeks of October, scrapes are really, really good, especially when it's coincides with a weather event. And you capitalized on something like that this past year.
Yeah, I did. Real quick, why are scrapes good during that time?
Because, now this is just me talking, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure somebody can have some more scientific anecdotes here. But deer go through... Bucks especially go through hormonal changes throughout the year. Their testosterone levels fluctuate up and down, and it will be the lowest when they drop their antlers in early spring, and then it will be its highest during the rut, which is, you know, pretty much the month of November. And as that progresses, from deer shedding their velvet, which means they take the fuzzy stuff off their antlers, and then they have hard antlers. As their testosterone ramps up, they start to do more bucky things, like rub trees, chase does, fight, and make scrapes.
Swell up in the neck.
There's internal changes, like
muscles.
You're saying. Yeah, like their muscles grow while they're doing these things. And that's part of why they rub and fight, to kind of also help with those things. But in late October, that testosterone's really starting to peak, and they're really wanting to get after it, and they want to get out and do stuff, and they just get anxious, and they have a lot of energy that is testosterone fueled, and they really want to get out and fight and just show that they're the coolest guy around. And I think that that's why scrapes become such a big thing on cold fronts, especially because normally deer will still, during hot weather, lay low during the daytime and then at night go and have a ton of scrape activity and run around and just do bucky stuff. But when you have a cold front that coincides with that, those deer feel like getting on their feet during daylight hours because they're feeling frisky, right?
Makes
it's like like if you're ever played any football, like in the fall, that first crisp practice.
Crisp.
Yeah, that's when you're like, this is football weather. Deer are kind of like that too, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, as they're working into the more peak rut stuff, that pre-rut in late October, I think you have still a lot of does that are not receptive and are being frustratingly difficult. I think there's some guys that might could relate to that.
Yes.
And it makes these bucks think, okay, well, you know, let me know when you're ready. You know what I mean? And that's what the scrape is. It's like, I'm going to open this thing up, and I want you to just let me know when you're ready, and I'll know when I need to be actually taking this frustration out a little more.
Do you know if this is the case? I assume that deer paw the scrape to try and remove the previous buck's scent from the scrape and then put down their fresh scent. Is that why they paw? Like, not to make it, but when they walk up there to a pre-existing scrape and they paw, I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I thought it was to get rid of leaves and debris so that they get more contact with the soil, I guess, and it stays in the dirt longer, the smell does.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's all of the above, or maybe there's somebody that knows better than us that should be able to answer that
question. I'm sure there is. We're not the biologists, guys.
No.
We're just the map guys.
That's right. So speaking of that, you and I did some map scout work last summer, and you were just alluding to this, but I ended up having a really good hunt over it this fall in late October. And what we had done was we scouted out a place that looked like a spot we could kind of go through, not spend too long with the boots, and spend some time on the ground, real quick, kind of in and out, make a loop. We like to make loops a lot of times. And so we ended up going in there, and just, this is kind of interesting, but we were combing through an area, three of us were, and you were kind of taking the middle. Mm-hmm. Well, you were in the thick stuff, and just kind of the natural corridor that was in there, because of certain like sloughs and creeks and elevation and stuff, you just literally walked right into a scrape, and it was a good scrape, and it's a year-round scrape. And so there's a couple of things we want to talk about in regards to scrapes real quick that are kind of different. So you've got these like field edge scrapes. They typically get hit at night, and they may not be hit for very long at all. They may even just get opened up and nothing else really hits them if a buck's just kind of out of the deer range and he's just going rut crazy, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you've got scrapes that are like a hub scrape, or a lot of people call them annual scrapes, where multiple trails come in together and deer use this area a lot of times year round. And so this is what we found, where multiple trails, did I say scrapes? Multiple trails come into the scrape, and it was like still, you could tell there was a big hole there because it was summertime and there was still a dirt spot, you know.
And there was a good licking branch that, yes, still was in use.
Still in use, yeah. You could tell like there were some fresh breakings on the branch, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll break the little twigs off. And you could tell it was relatively fresh. So you know where they're using it in the summer. And at that point, we decided this is a great place to put a trail camera. And we dropped a trail camera in there and found out they were using it all summer. And so it turned out to be a good spot throughout as October came and hunting season was here. And we basically, like you were saying earlier, I tracked the weather up there, and when I saw a cold front coming, I decided to get out, and it was supposed to come in on an afternoon, and so that was the first afternoon I sat. I drove the first morning, then I walked in that afternoon and shot a deer in 2 hours, and not just any deer, but a really, really big 8-point. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we didn't necessarily find that scrape on the map by map scouting.
But we found the area.
We found the area by map scouting. But what's a way that you could find a hub scrape on a map?
So it's the much more difficult version of the two to find, mm-hmm, right? So an annual hub scrape, or perennial scrape, whatever you want to call them, they are going to be in a place that is socially frequented by deer, okay? And I think, to describe the area where that one is without really going into too much detail, it's a place where there are woodlots around and then connecting timber strips.
Mm-hmm.
And this is almost like a place where it would look similar to a diagram of an atom, or what's something that's a little bit more
coronavirus.
Yeah, coronavirus. You know, kind of like the spokes on a wheel type thing or whatever, but you have like 2, 3, 4, 5 woodlots around, and then there's like this thing in the middle that's not quite as big, but it's definitely a spot where you can see that deer are traveling from one woodlot to another, or hanging out in, and you're seeing a little bit of terrain and that sort of thing. That's going to be a spot where you're going to be able to find some hub scrapes. They're not always going to be there. It's kind of a difficult thing. It's one of those things you kind of have, just have a keen eye for whenever you're walking around in the woods. Not the peninsula, though. Yeah. But the, you know, you got to have good awareness of your situation when you're scouting, and to be able to recognize, like, hey, this wasn't just made like November 12th. This was something that's, you know, been here since last, or for who knows how long, right? But it will always be a scrape every year.
Yeah. I think a couple of things as well is, I think you could find these in saddles sometimes, mm-hmm, because you're going to a lot of times have two trails that cross in the saddle, and it's, mm-hmm, also a place that doesn't go away. Like, a, mm-hmm, saddle is there. Like, no, and most of the time, a farmer could come in and clear a fence line or do something, change a crop or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you could have some things change sometimes in farm country or wherever. this is something that's not going to change. And I think another thing that's worth maybe just kind of noting, and I don't know how much control you have over this necessarily, but as a tree grows, sometimes that good height of a licking branch gets a little too high. Mm-hmm. And so, like, finding a tree that's going to be in that height range for a few years is a good way to, I guess, create your own success, you know, over the next few years, and to ensure that that's like a hub scrape that lasts for a while.
The first hub scrape I ever found was about 2004. It was actually in East Texas in cattle country, and it was kind of a similar situation as far as like a woodlot that was smaller than the surrounding timber. And there was an old two-track that ran through there, and then there was an intersecting deer trail to that two-track. And I remember seeing an active licking branch in the middle of summer, and I thought, man, that's weird. Those deer always go the same. You know, I could tell it was a scrape, and, like, back then I didn't really put it all together that, like, that's what it was. But I was like, man, how weird is it these deer go here even when they're not rutting and they're messing around with this thing, you know? And it's still... Like, I think that's also kind of a testament, as a side note, to, like, remembering things and taking note of things that you're in the woods that you find, so that you can just start using that knowledge you accumulate to help you, you know, 10, 15 years down the road to kill deer.
And that's why the picture portion of the OnX map pins is a good thing, man. You can, you know, you and I have found that the more... Especially the more days in a row we've scouted or hunted, the less we remember.
Yes.
And so having pictures of that to be able to store with your pins
is good. I'm telling you, last year we scouted Mark Twain National Forest over here in Missouri. And I hardly remember that unless I sit here real hard and think about that.
Yeah.
You know, because we went in, spent 6 hours or so in there, scattered tails off, hung a trail camera, and... You know, got some good bucks on camera, but it was just like a, you know, small part of the whole year.
Yeah.
And it's like a big deal, really, you know. But, yeah, it's like relying on your own memory the older you get is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Pretty much
pictures are good, man. That's kind of why we talk about self-filming as being a good thing sometimes, too, you know, and also a bad thing. But that's another episode you've probably heard before. But let's talk about...
You did self-film yourself. Funny enough, you did some self-filming and shot a buck over a scrape in late December, though. It wasn't in, like, that late October time period.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. This is what I would consider a scrape line, okay?
Ooh.
And this is a little different than a hub scrape. And I mentioned earlier, you can find these on field edges. There are other ways you can find them, too. And so this particular incident was a scrape line kind of along a creek system, coming actually from a creek crossing along some of the I guess hackberry trees that were kind of following the flow of this creek, right? And so there's on a scrape line, you typically have some kind of a edge that these are on. And so that's one of those edges you don't really recognize until you're kind of in there sometimes. But it's not to say you can't find these on the map and go see and find, you know, find out if they have scrapes on these edges, right? You can see that edge from the, like, I can look at the aerial now and go, oh yeah, see why that's there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder to say, I bet there's one there. Let me go look at
it. In that scenario, but at the same time, there are situations where you could be like, you know, there's a field edge, and I see one tree that the farmer kind of missed or did a little jag around that I bet you there's some overhanging limbs.
Yeah.
And, like, you could pick that out on a map.
Oh, for 100%. Yeah. And I think that's where you want to start. And the thing is, dude, deer can be killed on those scrape lines. Like, if you have visual seclusion from roadways and houses and human activity on a field edge, you can kill good bucks on those scrapes during, you know, technically late October, early November. You can kill good bucks on those scrapes a lot of times. So don't overlook those, especially if you're hunting private pieces, man. Like, that is just, that could be golden. So think about that. You can look those, like you said, you can find those on aerials pretty easily. You know, it's just like, if you're in the Midwest or, you know, high deer density area, if it's got an edge to it with trees on it and they're the right trees, like bodarks, hackberries, those kind of things, you've probably got branches that fit into that, you know, 4 to 6 foot window that deer like to scrape on. And so something that's something to be looked at. And then also, like you mentioned, look for the one tree that sticks out a little bit, you know, for some reason, and that's the one that's going to have a scrape on it and might be the best place to be set up when you go in.
Or to set a trail camera. That's one of the big things I think that we need to – we've talked about a little bit, but it probably doesn't – you can't have too much emphasis on the value of a trail camera over a scrape because it's almost a surefire way to see every deer that's in that immediate area.
Yeah. What do you look for when you get to a place that you think a scrape might be?
What time of year is it?
Both. I would say before the scrapes, well, you know, about the time the scrapes open up, say mid-October.
Okay. I'm looking for size of the scrape, and that's going to be relative, but a lot of times you'll find just a place where the grass is kind of torn up a little bit, and maybe it's not a spot that looks quite ideal for scrapes, and I think that bucks make, in that time of year, they might make 30 scrapes a day or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think they're running around just being just, you know, bullies all the time. But one of those places that multiple deer are using, you can tell. And a scrape that has, you know, quite a few trails around it as well, that's going to be important. I think that's really how you're going to tell, you know, that it's going to be something that's going to be used a lot that year. That and a good licking branch, because honestly, it's a huge component to the scrape is the licking branch. If now I've seen scrapes that are active that don't have licking branches at all, but that's usually in an area that doesn't have a lot of trees and stuff, and you know, some type of open terrain or maybe out west. But if you're in, you know, normal whitetail country that has quite a few trees, if that licking branch gets broken off or it goes away, or even if it dies, like a lot of times that's not going to, that scrape isn't going to stick. It's going to move. Kind of like what you're talking about, if it outgrows it or whatever, same kind of deal. So I think, you know, finding one that has a good licking branch, something that's more than just like a, you know, a twig or something, but, you know, a branch that's got some pretty good meat to it. I think that's kind of what I'm looking for. And even one that's been broken and tattered up. I mean, you'll find them sometimes that are like chewed on, you know, like they're just, those bucks are just raging. They're putting that thing in their mouth and chomping on it, you know?
Yeah. What about, so quickly go through trail camera strategy when hanging on a scrape, and then also hunting strategy and what you would do to when you're sitting there looking at that scrape, what are you thinking about in regards to hunting?
So trail camera stuff, I think that scrapes are a really great place to hang a trail camera. Like I said, I think that you want to hang that trail camera either low or high. You don't want it to be at deer eye level, which for most people is kind of belly button. Wouldn't you say it's kind of about deer eye level?
Yep. So I'd say anything under 5 foot is kind of in the, kind of low.
We do have one that we hang in particular. We have a really great hub scrape that we found on a Texas public piece, and we hang that camera kind of low, and it actually rises up to the scrape from where that is. So technically that camera's probably at like 1 foot level, looking up a little bit at the deer, and it doesn't seem to bother them too much. But what I'm trying to say is you don't want a camera that's kind of right on a deer's eye level on a scrape, because it's just going to be a new thing that they don't like. A lot of cameras have red flash, or they make noise when they trigger or something, and it's going to be a situation where it's just unnatural. So I would say the best thing to do is to figure out what direction most deer are shaking that scrape from, and I'd almost say that 75% of the scrape action is done perpendicular to the tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
especially on
in
field edges and edges, you know, scrape lines.
They're coming in and they're like facing the tree and they're messing with the scrape. So if you can find a tree next to it, point it down at that scrape, and, you know, set the camera for, it's going to be kind of like if you're setting a camera on bait. You don't want to have a camera that's triggering all the time, or you'll have a whole bunch of pictures of the same buck, which is also kind of cool sometimes. You know, it depends on what you're wanting. But if you're trying to get a catalog, it's best to kind of put a little bit bigger trigger on that camera possibly, or a longer trigger. You know, it's like, you know, a minute between each one or two.
Longer
or three.
Delay.
Yes, exactly. Trigger delay. That's what we're trying to say.
Yep.
And, but that's kind of my strategy, and I don't go in there and check that thing very often. I think we never checked the camera until, well, we checked it once in the summer. Anthony went over and checked it for us, the one you killed in late October. But, for the most part, You want to let that camera sit until it is like the dates to go in there and hunt that scrape. And maybe even take what it takes to check that camera when you go in and see if there's been activity.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of my strategy for trail cameras. I think that you'd be able to speak better to the hunting portion of the scrape than I would. I mean, we both hunt them and both do it pretty effectively, but the fact that you killed two deer over them this year is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, killed two nice bucks over scrapes this year. And you're right, man, the camera, you know, the camera is important. Like, it helps you, you know, honestly, the camera helped me to kill the first one in early October, I think. Having that info and knowing which way they're coming in on a hub scrape is very important.
And you the confidence to know that there were really great bucks in there, too.
Yeah. It's like, you know, well, this scrape has good bucks that are worth going in for, you know. And so, but you can put a scrape out with a camera, so you just got to be careful with it, you know. So, but I, that's, you know, the first point I made there about knowing which way the deer come in. And this is a hub scrape, like I said, so you got several trails coming into it. But I think you can see where the majority of them are coming in. And it's the same concept as the landmarks we've talked about, where on a landmark tree situation, there are typically a couple of trails that are better than the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And fence crossing, same deal. Typically a couple of trails that are better that come into that fence crossing trail than the others that come into it. And so knowing that is a big way to help you blow your wind in the right direction, which you're going to really have to be conscious of. A lot of times I think those scrapes are made to be approached from the downwind side because they're going to want to smell that thing as they're coming up to it, you know. And so I guess that's an important factor. And then when it comes to, you know, kind of when to hunt a scrape, I think that it depends on where you're at, where you're hunting in the country, I guess, sometimes. But in my experience, in a lot of the places I have hunted, you can kill deer in that late October on a cold front. I think it's a great time to be there. But I think a scrape, you know, you ranked at the beginning of this thing a scrape at a one or two, and I would agree, a scrape has got to be one of the best places to hunt, period, if you can find one that just stays hot and fresh. And so in my opinion, I think you can kill deer on a scrape throughout the entire year, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You're gonna have that kind of what they call kind of a secondary rut in late November a lot of times, where I think deer are gonna come back and check scrapes in that time as well. And then you know, late in the year, at least in some of the more southern parts of the U.S. where I've hunted, but I mean this probably happens all over. You get some fawns that come in into estrus and I think that if that happens, that late season can be a time to hunt scrapes too. People don't talk about it much, but last year, I mean, I think it was on December 28th, killed a buck that was checking a scrape line, had been chasing. There was a hot fawn is what it was. There was a family group of does that was running for their lives and there was bucks chasing them everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
And it was close to food. I mean, I think you want to be kind of close to food late season, whatever you're doing most of the time. But there was that scrape line and I noticed the scrapes, you know, when I scouted my way in a new spot and I noticed the scrapes and I was like, there's like three scrapes right here within 15 yards of each other.
Mm-hmm.
This is a spot, you know? And so I set up, killed a deer an hour and 15 minutes later, you know?
Yeah.
And,
I think, that's going to be coming, that footage of that's going to be coming out in August of 2021. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that. Cause that's actually a big buck that you shot that hasn't even seen a light of day yet. As far as the content production side.
I'm excited, man. I've gotten close to finishing it up. It's a pretty long video, really, because there's a lot of things that went down. I've talked about it on our main show here. If you haven't heard our main show, we appreciate you subscribing, checking that out. But you know, there was some crazy things with just some kind of weird acting landowners that were around and all kinds of stuff, man. And so the footage is awesome. It makes for kind of a longer video, but some people seem to appreciate those. And we actually have quite a bit of footage that's going to release August, September, and on into October. That's from last year. So pretty excited about it, man.
You know, something I'd like to probably throw in here, though, with hunting scrapes, like a caveat, is that It depends on where you're at in the country and how rut action works for you. A lot of these, especially upper Midwestern states, have very kind of strict calendars when it comes to rut.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that when the rut is the hottest, bucks actually aren't on the scrapes that much. They'll still be hitting them from time to time, but they have one thing on their mind, and that is does, and they know where they're at. So they're not trying to find the hot one per much.
They're just following does around all day pretty
exactly.
much.
Exactly. And really, they're not rubbing. They're not scraping. They're not eating. They're not drinking. They're not doing any of that stuff hardly. They're just chasing does. So never a bad time to hunt a scrape, but I would say like November 3rd to November 10th might not be as good as you would think it would be.
Doe bedding might be a good place, might should do a public land pen about that.
We just might have to talk about that.
So with that, how do we mark these things, and what are you marking when you go in and find one of these?
You know, a lot of times I don't have this marked from map scouting. A lot of times what I'm doing with map scouting is finding the area that I think is really good, you know, and I'll probably just mark with the general, you know, pin, like this is a spot I want to go check out, and just look for a deer sign. And then when you find a hub scrape, Onyx has a scrape button to mark, but I really like to take a picture of the dirt, the
branch,
licking branch, the tree that I think we should hunt in, and the trail camera that there'll be four pictures on that thing that I save with that pin.
That's because we find scrapes very important. You know, like when we're scouting, we see a lot of rubs, but we are looking for scrapes almost always.
And I think that's the thing when you go on the ground in there, like you need to not only mark the scrape, but you need to find the tree for northwest wind and figure out which tree you're going to go hang in. And then when you're doing your retrospective stuff at night in bed, you need to decide what your best access is for that thing, for that northwest wind, right? I think that this is one of the few things that we can go ahead and just say a specific wind for, because at least for the early or late October stuff, like cold fronts are going to come from the north-northwest, right? So you need to really think about the southeast or south side of that scrape, depending on, you know, what direction deer are going to be coming from. It really sets up real well if you can get some trail camera data and see that deer are coming from the west or the north or even the east to that scrape, and then you can just have something foolproof if you have some, like, southeastern access.
Yeah, for sure. So marking trails, marking the scrape, marking the tree that you're going to hunt in. You mark the tree with the old stand tree.
Usually the stand tree. Sometimes I kind of throw it a little bit of a curveball, and I mark a roost tree because, you know, I'm up there hanging in the roost like a turkey.
But, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
usually I mark it with the tree stand thing. You know, we need to talk to him about getting a saddle icon, because you're not really hanging in stands that much right now. You know, we kind of have gone pretty much full bore saddle on this stuff. So.
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
And I think one thing you could do also after you check that trail camera for the first time, if you have an assumption about bedding, then that'd be a good time to mark bedding as well. So that can help you with your access later on when you come in to that scrape and you know where to access. And that was a big key on the October buck for me, was the access. You know, the northwest wind played into everything. I mean, played into me hunting the scrape, played into me accessing the scrape correctly, because we had deer bedding to the southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to come in from the southeast and hunt a northwest wind, let it blow back where I came from. I mean, it was just like ideal, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, just perfect. So there's definitely a lot of different icons you can use around the scrape that'll help you really plan out your hunt and get exactly where you want to get set up, and hopefully have a hunt like I did on October 23rd last year, where you kill a buck in less than 2 hours like that.
If you're into this kind of stuff and feel like you need more, you can check out our Map Scout Challenge series on YouTube. These are the most comprehensive scouting videos on the internet.
Make sure and subscribe while you're there. And also remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.